Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello there and welcome to another Arse Blog Arsecast right here on arseblog.com. What a show we have for you and what a weekend it is. The first North London derby of the season. At a time when Ireland is receiving a bailout, we need to give Spurs a bailout, or we need to give Spurs' bail out of the stadium. That didn't work at all. Where's James Richardson when you need him? Now, he probably puts a slight bit of thought and preparation into his little jokes at the start, which probably makes all the difference, you know. Anyway, between now and the end of the show, we'll be talking a lot about Arsenal versus Spurs. Well, a good bit. It's not solely dedicated to that, but we'll be talking about Arsenal versus Spurs. Arshavin is here. Philippe Auclair will be here to talk a bit about the French connection, the three new French connected arrivals, because I know Shamak isn't French, but you know what I'm talking about. He'll be here to talk about that and the Spurs game. We'll have the winner of the GCR Books competition, as well as giving you the chance to win a fabulous Savile Rogue scarf. It wouldn't be a winter Arsecast without a Savile Rogue scarf, so that's all coming up between now and the end of the show. So, between the last Arsecast and this Arsecast, we've had a quiet enough week. We've had an interlull, amazingly, and I'm touching wood because we haven't got all the injury news yet because some of the players are still due to come back, but it seems all of our players went away in the middle of the week to play for their countries, and there was no sprains, breaks, tweaks, niggles, strains, ouchies, there's nobody dead, there's nobody who was dead and then brought back to life and is actually a zombie version of the player that we had before. There's no snap this, no torn that. I mean, I don't quite know what's going on. I'm not complaining, mind, but there you go. That's what's happening. They've all gone away. Not all of them play. Gael Clichy sat on the bench, and I watched England versus France, and what can you do? What can you expect, though? At least I just watch it on the television. 85,000 people paid money to go and see that in Wembley Stadium. Did none of those people watch the World Cup? What's wrong with them? England were awful, and France were even more awful than England in the World Cup. Yet, a few months later, 85,000 people go, well, you know, that's not bad, actually. I think I'll go and pay money to go and see England versus France. Not like Hollywood, is it? Make one bad film and people go, well, I'm not going to see your next fucking film. Fuck you. But you can play an entire tournament like a cunt, and they'll still pay to see you. But anyway, that's by the by. That was the internationals, and, you know, ill-timed as they were, we seem to have come through well enough. So maybe our luck is changing a little bit. I don't want to jinx it, so I'm going to touch wood and touch my glass, which contains bourbon and martini and maraschino cherry and some Angostura bitters, and it's very delicious. But maybe, just maybe, things are going our way a little bit in terms of the injuries. And before that, we had a great win on Sunday against Everton. Away from home, another tough game, and scored two goals, went 2-0 up through Bakary Sagna, of all people. Doesn't get too many, only his second ever goal for Arsenal, and quite the finish it was, too, at the near post. And Cesc Fabregas with a goal, showing that he's beginning to come back to his best, and a real threat up front. And when Cesc scores, we win. I saw a stat today on Twitter, UpToJoe, I think it was, saying that he scored in 31 league games for Arsenal, and we haven't lost any of the games that he scored in. Let me just look that up here. Cesc Fabregas has never been on the losing side in the Premier League in the 31 games that he has scored in. All we need to do then to win the title is ensure that Cesc scores in every game. Now, it sounds simplistic, doesn't it? And as far as I can see, it is. We just need to make sure he scores in every game. There's no magic to it. Just Cesc, you go and score and we'll win the league. I know it's putting a lot of pressure on him, perhaps, but there you go. You don't win leagues the easy way. Lukasz Fabianski made some good saves in the final 10 minutes, and they score through Tim Cahill. And I really don't like Tim Cahill. And I know a lot of people go, you know, he's the kind of player I'd like to see it. He's one of my favourite players outside of Arsenal. And this, to me, is the thing. I don't understand favourite players outside of Arsenal. Now, I know Robert Pires has just signed for Aston Villa. And Robert, as we all know, is super dreamy. But in general, we're talking about players who play for other teams. And having favourite players on other teams and second teams and all that does not make any sense to me. Tim Cahill, to me, he's got one of those faces. I'm sorry. I just can't bear it. And he scored, and I thought there was actually a foul. I think it was Saha climbing all over the back of Alex Song. And I think, to be fair, Fabianski deserved his clean sheet. But anyway, we hung on, and that's two very, very good away wins within the space of a couple of days. Wolves and Everton, we've had to scrap and get the points. And considering what happened with Chelsea just a couple of hours after we beat Everton, it was a fantastic weekend. Chelsea taken apart by Sunderland. I know people say, Sunderland, you know. But they're not bad. Let's face it, they drew with us. And, well, you know, we've got to be the standard. Chelsea were terrible, and it's about time they were terrible. But what was really interesting, and it's something we'll touch on a bit later on, is that at half-time, when Chelsea were 1-0 down, and having conceded a goal at home for the first time this season, their fans booed them off the park. Like, booed them off. Having conceded one goal at home all season. Understand that people get frustrated with bad performances and teams set their own standards, but come on. It's not right. Even if it is Chelsea, I mean, I would boo them off even if they were winning. I would launch hand grenades and flamethrowers and anthrax envelopes onto the pitch. But that's me. But I'm not a Chelsea fan. Maybe there should be just a little bit more understanding. I'm not saying it's not hilarious to me, because it is. I'm just saying it's just interesting. And we'll come back to it a little bit later on in the wake of, or not in the wake of, but in light of what's coming up this weekend. The gap is closed at the top of the table to 2 points. And after last weekend's defeat to Newcastle, people were thinking, oh no, it's all going horribly wrong again. It sort of started going, what's the opposite of horribly wrong? Brilliantly right? Beautifully right? Perhaps it was beautifully right. It was a beautifully right weekend last weekend. To talk a little bit more about what's happened between the last Arsecast and this one, here's Internet Joe.
Oh, I'm Internet Joe, and here's me 32nd roundup. Everything away. Tough one this. Not feeling too confident. Sanya, get in there, you Floella Benjamin looking legend. Cesc, deadly goal. Fabianski again. And again. Ah, fuck off, Cahill, you hair-lip cunt. International friendlies. Hope we don't get any injuries. Interlull. Spurs are cunts.
More from Internet Joe on next week's Arsecast. Still to come, we'll have some early team news and a look ahead to the Spurs game tomorrow. Arshan will be along. I'll give you the answer to and the winners of the GCR Books competition, as well as a chance to win yourself a Savile Rogue scarf. But now, to talk about the players that Arsenal signed this summer, the three with a French connection, as well as looking ahead to the Spurs game a little bit as well, I'm delighted to welcome back to the Arsecast Philippe Auclair from France Football. Hello, Philippe.
Hello, Andrew.
I want to talk to you first about the three players with French connection that have come in to Arsenal this season. Skilacci, Chamakh and Koscielny. Chamakh we spoke about last year on the Arsecast, and there was an awful lot of talk about him coming in maybe in January, and that didn't happen. He's made the step up from the French league. Have you been surprised at how quickly he's adapted and how well he's done? Because in France, he wasn't necessarily renowned for the amount of goals that he scored, but his tally so far is more than respectable.
Well, he was not the same kind of player at all, actually, when he was... Well, at all. He was not the same kind of player when he was with Bordeaux. You're quite right in saying he was not one of those free-scoring centre-forwards, 25, 30 goals a season, something like that, in all competitions. In fact, I believe that his best season, which was 2008-2009, if I'm not mistaken, he scored barely more than 15 goals, so in all competitions. So he was by no means that kind of player. He had other values for Bordeaux. He was always the focal point in a 4-2-3-1 formation where he was basically holding the ball, mostly staying in the box, sometimes coming out of it. And, you know, we could all see his qualities as a guy who could retain the ball up front, who had an absolutely fantastic jump. And was also somebody who had the right attitude when it came to the approach of a game in terms of tracking back, helping his defenders, being the first defender from the pitch and so forth, and also had a great attitude in the dressing room. So that hasn't come as a surprise. The fact that he scored so much, so many goals so quickly, especially if you compare his performance with that, for example, of Thierry Henry when he arrived from Juve, or even from Dennis when he arrived from Inter, really took quite a while to find their feet in the league. And in the case of Thierry, how many games was that? 7 or 8 before he scored at Southampton?
Yeah, I think.
And Dennis was the same. I mean, 6 or 7. I don't have the figures at my fingertips, but it did take them a while. So he's done, I think, much, much better than could be expected. He's not quite there yet. I mean, he has moments when he can drift out of the game when, for example, against Newcastle, I think he was not probably at his best. But what we've seen so far is quite remarkable. The kind of service he's getting at Arsenal is, of course, superior to what he was getting at Bordeaux.
Exactly.
His role has evolved as well. I was actually recently doing a tactical analysis with our friends from Opta about where he was getting the ball, who he was passing it to. And I compared the his placement and his touches to that of Andrei Arshavin. And when you were putting the two together and you saw the diagrams, to be honest, you could have mistaken one for the other. Because he does actually work so hard outside of the box, particularly on the left-hand side, that you could think of him almost as a winger who happens to be in the box from time to time, which is quite remarkable. Not at all like the Chamakh we knew from France. So he certainly has widened, I would say, his role on the pitch, but from qualities which he already possessed at Bordeaux. So I'm very, very pleasantly surprised. I thought he would do well in England anyway because of his attitude as much as anything. But that he's done so quickly is a little bit of a surprise to me.
The physical side of that, though, when you talk about it, we know he's played a lot more than perhaps he would have because of the injuries to Van Persie and Bender's
yes.
only just coming back into the squad. So from a physical point of view, it'll be important to bring the others back into the team to help him maintain that kind of work rate.
In which case you're wondering which shape is the team going to take, because if you bring back Van Persie in, I mean, he played 45 minutes, if I'm not mistaken, against the Netherlands yesterday night. How do you accommodate Van Persie and Chamakh in the same team? In the case of a centre-forward like Bentner, you can imagine that Bentner goes to the right wing, where actually I think he had some of his best Arsenal games in this position. Chamakh is not at all the same kind of player. Technically, it's very different. I think Bentner actually has got a better first touch than Chamakh. And it will surprise a few people when I say that. yes, I can hear you laughing. but he does have a very, very, very good touch indeed, Bentner, for a big guy. Chamakh, you can't see, you know, if you think, okay, if you put Arshavin on the left and you put Nasri on the right, or you put Walcott on the right, and you've got Van Persie there as a centre-forward, which he was, and around whom the whole team seemed to be based last year before he got injured. Where do you fit Chamakh? Is he a luxury substitute? I don't think so. He's achieved already too much for Wenger to put him there. I'm not too sure about that. Would you put, for example, Van Persie more in the 9.5 position, more a la Bergkamp, as it were, with Chamakh up front, Arshavin on the left, and Nasri on the right? It's not that obvious at all, but in all honesty, it's a problem that a number of Arsenal's rivals for the title could do with at the moment. It looks to me as if it's the best collection of forwards the club has had in a very, very long time.
It's a good problem for Arsene to try and solve, so we'll leave that to him while we can speculate. Let's talk about Schillaci, because He's a French international, hasn't really played a great deal recently for the international team.
No.
But hugely experienced as well, and has experienced life outside France as well, with his time at Sevilla, did well there and won European competitions there. He's added an experience to the centre-halves that was certainly needed anyway when you look at Sylvester leaving, Gallas leaving, Sol Campbell leaving, and on a football point of view, you can understand those departures. But the experience that they had is also very important, especially for younger players that are coming through. He's got on with things and just done his job fairly quietly and impressively.
Well, he's a quiet type anyway. He's not somebody, if you talk to him, you know, in the mix zone after a Champions League game, he's not somebody who's going to be exactly the most forthright of interviewees. He tends to keep things to close to his chest. He's very discreet. But paradoxically, one of the things that Wenger told me about Schillaci is that one of the reasons that he's made he's made such an impact, because he has made an impact, is actually a talker on the pitch. And I know that many Arsenal fans have had this problem with defenders recently. Certainly, ever since it seems Tony Adams left the team, is that there were not enough bosses in that back four. Mm. People who could point out where a defender should be placed, where a midfielder should be placed as well, and communicate basically with the rest of the back four. And strangely enough, Schillaci was very, very quiet off the pitch. Is by all accounts a model professional. Certainly, the reputation he had both in France and also at Sevilla, is somebody who is very, very active, both in the dressing room and on the pitch. And it's something that Wenger, felt it was necessary to put forward. And the first thing, actually, he said about Schillaci, when I asked him, a question, actually, about the way that Schillaci and Giroud were playing together, I was quite surprised how well they were playing together. Mm. For people who had, never been on the same pitch before. He said, the important thing, one of the important factors is the fact that Schillaci is somebody who is very vocal on the pitch and is constantly looking at the way the defense is organized. Obviously, he's very level-headed. Technically, he's a very sound player. I think he's, actually playing the ball out of defense has been superb this season, which is maybe one aspect of his game that hasn't been commented on very much. Also, when you think the kind of strikers he had to deal with when he was either in Liga or La Liga, and suddenly he finds himself against people like, Kevin Davis, Joanna Amanda, or Andy Carroll, he hasn't done too badly in that respect, when it's a completely new experience for him in many ways. So I think a terrific, actually, acquisition for very, very little money, even though you wouldn't have expected maybe that you would play so many games so early in the season. Mm. If it hadn't been for the injury to Thomas Vermaelen, it's very doubtful that either Koscielny or Schillaci would have played as many games as that.
Mm. Well, this was the point I was going to make about Koscielny, because when we talk about his introduction to English football, I think if Vermaelen had been fit, he certainly wouldn't have played as much as he has. He's been thrown in at the deep end, and for the most part has done, I think he's done all right. He's got caught a couple of times. But for him, more than Shamak or Schillaci, the step up is considerable, because two seasons ago he was playing in the French second division, had only one season in the top flight in France, and then is being asked to step up again because there is a big difference in quality and playing Champions League football. How have you viewed the way he's adapted? And his potential as well, I suppose.
Well, I'm in two minds about Koscielny, if I'm absolutely honest about him. I think he's done probably better than I was expecting in some ways, but I also think that he's very far from the finished article, as they say here. These lapses in concentration are a big problem. I wouldn't say he's the Younes Kabul of Arsenal, because that would really wouldn't go down too well, would it?
No, probably not.
And actually, Kabul has got physically is much stronger, but has got far more lapses of concentration that Laurent Koscielny has. But I'm not absolutely sure that he's done as well as I've read in some places where people were already talking about him as a French international, and as somebody who would keep his place if Vermaelen was fit, and he would play alongside Schillaci and so forth. I'm not convinced about that yet. I think that he's adapted very well, very quickly, but we haven't seen him yet actually provide the kind of performance, you know, commanding performance that this type of player should give. Because you've got different types of central defenders. You would have somebody like Schillaci, who is very quiet, very unassuming, and I think Giroud is in the same position, actually, who do their jobs very efficiently, but not very spectacularly. Koscielny, the one thing he's got for him is absolutely phenomenal when it comes to tackling. His statistics in both Ligue 2 and Ligue 1 in France are actually unbelievable. If I am to believe them, apparently he didn't miss a single tackle in two seasons, which is absolutely astounding. This being said, a central defender, a great central defender, is not somebody who tackles a lot. Actually, it's the very opposite of that. A great central defender is somebody who doesn't need to tackle. And the fact that he's drawn to these kind of situations is really crowd pleasing, and you know, you'd love to see a player win a tackle, and he does do that on a regular basis. Well, very often it's because he's put himself in a position where he has to give it to make a tackle. And at the highest level, that's not what you should be looking for from a top defender. I'm sure if you looked at Lucio, for example, or Ricardo Carvalho, and if you looked at their figures for a whole season, I'd be surprised if they did more than 7 or 8 tackles a season. And I know it sounds very, very low.
A season.
William Gallas, who is William Gallas, so make of that what you want. but in his, you know, at his absolute best, was doing 7, 8 tackles a season. That's it. A season over a whole championship season. You know, when I talk about tackle, I talk about the proper, good old style, you know, English sliding tackle. A great defender doesn't need to do that. And people in England will talk about Bobby Moore. In France, we'll talk about Laurent Blanc, who never tackled anyone. Never. And he didn't need to, because he was in the right position. He was winning the ball in the air. He was there. He was intercepting. He was just fighting in 50-50s and getting the ball, but staying on his feet. Koscielny is a player who is of a different kind. He's more dynamic. And he does have sometimes lapses of concentration. I hope I'm not sounding too negative about him, because I think, on the other hand, he's done remarkably well considering where he comes from. That 2 years ago, as you said, he was playing for Tours in Ligue 2, where he was voted, by the way, the best player in the whole league in any position. But I'm
ready to pop the question. The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arseblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arseblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/arseblog.
I have yet to be convinced by him.
That's fair enough. I mean, I think we can talk about the period of adaptation that he's got to go through. So, and when you look at it, he's probably signed as third choice centre half when you look at Vermaelen and Scalacci going to come through. So anyway, we'll give him time.
Yes, indeed. And don't forget Giroud and that, because I've been quietly impressed by the quietly impressive Yoann Giroud.
Yes.
Who did, I think, extremely well at Everton. In particular, where, you know, coming back from a series of injuries as he had, you know, was confronted with some players who are very, very difficult to deal with. Mm. Whatever people say about Everton not being on their game on that particular day, I thought he dealt with it extremely well. And I also like the way he plays the ball out of defence very, very much. He's a midfielder to start with, which Cassini is not. My judgment is reserved. I'd like to see more of Koscielny over a longer period of time. It's far too early to say after 13 games, of which he's played, what, 8, 9, something like that, which is quite remarkable already.
Yeah.
But let's wait and see.
All right. Well, these three players are going to experience the North London Derby for the first time tomorrow. Will they need some reminding or some education about the importance of this fixture, or is there an awareness among professional footballers that this is a derby game? We know that this is one of the fixtures of the season, and we're going to have to go out, you know, and give everything and a bit more. You know, are they aware of the importance of this fixture to the fans? And obviously, from a league point of view, this is a game that that has crucial points, particularly as the gap has been closed on Chelsea last weekend.
Well, I think that the fact that a number of these Arsenal players have been in the squad, even though they're very young, for quite a long time now, if you think of players like Clichy and Song and Danielson, and of course the captain himself, I think that the importance of the derby will be drummed into them. I'm not sure that Wenger himself will do it. I think he will more insist on the way that Arsenal should play in the particular derby. But as to the importance to the fans and to the players and for the season, I'm sure they will be reminded by their teammates more than anything. I don't think that they have any experience. I'm trying to think, because Chanak being at Bordeaux doesn't really have a big derby. Doesn't.
Mm. Sevilla Betis?
Sorry?
Sevilla and Betis for...
Sevilla and Betis, but Betis is a shadow of the shadow of the team we once loved. And it wasn't the same thing anyway. No, I wouldn't think so. As to Koscielny, he has absolutely no experience whatsoever of these kind of occasions.
Mm.
None. So I would say that the three don't really know what's going to fall on their heads when it comes to Saturday morning. But I'm also sure that, you know, the fact it's a very experienced team. It's this paradoxical Arsenal thing that you have a team that is both very young and very experienced, which is obviously one of the major assets this season, when you've got on one hand teams which are either too young or too inexperienced, and Arsenal seem to have both qualities.
Mm.
I mean, I'm not sure I said that the proper way, but you get my drift.
I know what you mean. And just to finish off, I mean, how do you view the form of the team going into this game? Because they've had two fantastic away wins under quite difficult circumstances, different kinds of games, and they've had to show, in particular in these last two games, sort of non-Arsenal qualities in terms of defending and hanging on and battling and facing up to the physical aspect of the game. We've seen the goalkeeper prove a key man in both of those games, and that's something that none of us had really thought about before. But the home form in particular is a bit of a worry, because we've watched Arsenal getting beaten by West Brom, we've watched them getting beaten by Newcastle,
by the way, absolutely fair results both of them. They were not, you know, hold ups or anything like that.
Yeah, so I mean, is that a little bit of a worry? I mean, in general, do you sense there's maybe a little bit more about this team than there has been in the previous seasons, or you know, has that yet to be proven?
I think away from home, yes, there is definitely a bit more than that. You could think of a number of occasions. I would put the game at Blackburn as well in those. There's definitely more, I think, in terms of the old, because when you say that, you know, we are only thinking a few years back. I mean, the Invincibles were absolutely magnificent away from home, and they showed these qualities time and again. It's been more of a problem since, you know, Clan Vanga got into, started for good when the decision was taken to go to the Emirates and the squad was renewed and rejuvenated, so to speak. But they are Arsenal qualities, though. I seem to remember certain title being won at Anfield, things like that. Yeah. They were Arsenal qualities. Maybe we are rediscovering those qualities.
Yeah.
The home form is a worry to me because both against West Brom and Newcastle, honestly, the performance was not under par. I don't know what par was on that particular day. It was somewhere else. I'm always concerned before those kind of derbies, despite the results. If I'm not mistaken, in the last 14 games at home since Arsenal has been in charge, Arsenal have won 10 and drawn 4, so I've never lost. So there's a bit of a pressure here applied. You know, it's always a game that you never—I never see it coming with trepidation and excitement. There's a little mixture of fear and apprehension there, thinking this could be the wrong day, and the memories of the old 4-0 at the Emirates still lingers. I do think they're better equipped, yes, and you also have to say that it is a really weakened Tottenham team, which is going to be at the Emirates on Saturday. Really weakened. If you compare the state of the squads as they are at the moment, they've got what? Defoe is missing. Huddleston, who's been a big player for them this season, is missing. Their central defence is very, very dubious, to say the least. The full-backs can be great on a good day, can be absolutely awful when they have an off day. You can go that like that through the whole team. They've got, what, 6 players missing, 8 players missing, 10 players, I think, missing from the first-team squad. So you would normally, on paper, say, well, it shouldn't be too difficult. But... The values that you have talked about, which Arsenal has shown away from home, they've yet to show them at home, where for some strange reason they haven't been able to impose a very, very fast tempo in terms of passing from the start of the games, from the first whistle. And that's been, I mean, can you think, I mean, I'm asking the question here, can you think of a single performance at home that was totally convincing for you?
No, but I mean, there were a couple against
Except
10 men, weren't there?
In the Champions League, which of course is very different. You know, against
the one against Shakhtar and Blackpool, yeah. But again, you're looking at playing Blackpool with 10 men. So no, I agree with you in the sense that they haven't seemed to shown the steel, or there seems to be more character on the road than there is at home.
No, I mean, especially for me, the best game was at Manchester City, which was absolutely a magnificent game in many ways. And in a game in which the team found its feet in terms of almost collective thinking when they showed a mature side we hadn't seen before that, where they were able to manage a situation against what was a very, very strong and really fired up Manchester City team, and they did it absolutely superbly. Now, will we see that? I don't know. My other concern, and stop me if I'm drivelling, is the fact that you've got two very, very different styles of coaching here. I mean, Redknapp is not a training ground manager, we all know that. But what he's very good at is at shaping a team according to the opponent's strengths and weaknesses. We had an example of that at White Hart Lane last spring, when what was supposedly an inferior Tottenham team, fighting for a place in the Champions League, as opposed to Arsenal fighting for the title, gave an absolute tactical lesson, masterclass, to Arsenal. And Redknapp, in that case, totally outwitted Arsene Wenger, which is one thing that, it might surprise you for me to say that. I thought Redknapp actually got it absolutely right. And my worry is that Arsenal will maybe not necessarily think of the the great strength that Tottenham still has this season. And I have to say, it's a derby that I'm looking forward to in a way, but I'm a little bit wary of. I don't want to strike too negative a note. Mm. I think that if the team plays to its potential, there's absolutely no doubt about the winner. Absolutely no doubt whatsoever. I'm just hoping that tactically and in terms of the way we prepare ourselves mentally for that game will be where we need to be for that particular fixture, because believe me, they will.
All right. Okay, Philippe, I can't say I disagree with you there at all. We better leave it there, though. Thank you very much indeed for your time.
Thank you very much indeed.
My thanks to Philippe Auclair from France Football. As always, some interesting and in-depth stuff from him. I will catch up with him again as the season progresses. Before we move on with the show, here's Arshavin.
Hello, I am Arshavin, and this week have a not good week at all. First have to travel to home to play international against what is name of a country where come from, Vermaelen, Belgium, this belt, but don't like to fly, not because don't have leg room, but the terrible film they show on plane is about a little boy who have a ginger sidekick and think he is greatest thing, and ginger sidekick and is all magic and was called Days of Thunder, and then play in game, lose game, have to play 90 minutes. I speak to Hiddink after and say, I am Arshavin, I am not a machine, 90 minutes, what, you crazy? Hiddink just turn and look at me in that way. One day I will take his eyes. Then on the way home, have to sit beside Pavlichenko, and he is talking about the game on Saturday against how do you call place where all are cunts? Tottenham. Yes, game against Tottenham, and Tottenham do this, and Tottenham do that, and Tottenham do this again. It's so boring, Pavlichenko, so boring. But I hope his child enjoy polonium teddy bear that I give. I hope they all enjoy.
We'll have more from Arshavin on another Arscast in the very near future. Now, competition last week was brought to you in association with gcrbooks.co.uk. They gave us some books to give away to you guys. I asked you what colour was the background on the website. Is it black and white, or was it in colour? And the answer was, of course, that it was in black and white. GCR Books have been republishing certain Arsenal books. Herbert Chapman on football. There's also the Arsenal Stadium Mystery, Forward Arsenal. Eddie Hapgood, Cliff Baston remembers. And a brand new book for the kids, Billy Gunner's First Match. Now, the random number generator has done its thing. And the winners are as follows. Peter Carberry, well done to you. Also Colin Bosworth, which sounds like a made-up name to be honest. But I'll let it pass this time. And also Daryl. Well done to you guys. I'll be in touch just to double-check your choice of book. I will get the book sent out to you as soon as we possibly can. If you're looking for Christmas presents, if you know an Arsenal fan who loves reading or loves Arsenal and wants to find out a bit more about the past, or you've got a young Arsenal fan who wants to get involved in reading, you want to encourage them a bit, Billy Gunner's First Match will probably be just the thing. Check out gcrbooks.co.uk, use Arsblog at checkout, and you get yourself a 10% discount on that. Now, that's not the end of the competitions, though, because it's winter. And winter, as we all know, is terrible and cold and minging and horrible. And to make your winter better, I've got a Savile Rogue scarf. And if you don't know what a Savile Rogue scarf is, you haven't been listening to the Arsecast for long, because since almost the day the Arsecast started, they've been giving us prizes, and they're brilliant prizes too. 100% cashmere red and white Arsenal scarves. They're really warm, keep your neck fantastic. And even though this is a recessionary time and we've got to tighten our belts, there are two things a man should not skimp on: his alcohol and his scarves. And Savile Rogue scarves make the best scarves there possibly are. So all you have to do is answer the following question, this Spurs North London Derby related question. Right, here it is. Okay. Robbie Keane is A, a fantastic player who is much undervalued and overabused. B, a player who doesn't get the credit he deserves for his majestic performances in the Premier League. Or C, a big desperate Dan-headed cunt of the highest order. So all you have to do is pick the right answer, A, B, or C, and send it to competition@arseblog.com. That's competition@arseblog.com, and the random number generator will do its thing next week and pick out one winner of a Savile Rogue scarf. But not to worry, we've got scarves to give away in the weeks ahead. And Savile-Rogue.com is where you'll find Savile Rogue scarves if you want to have a look at what you might win. Now, the North London Derby this weekend, the team news as follows. Jack Wilshere is having a fitness test, but he said on his Twitter account that he's feeling okay and he's confident that he's going to be ready for the weekend. The manager is still waiting for some of the players to come back, Andre Arshavin and Thomas Rosicki, but as far as we can tell, he's got pretty much a full squad to choose from. We don't know about Nicholas Bentner, whether the injury he had that kept him out of the Everton game is going to keep him out of this one. Manuel Almuni is still out. Thomas Vermaelen still out. And Abu Diaby still out. Now, I mentioned a little bit earlier about Chelsea and Chelsea fans booing the team off at halftime when they conceded a goal at home for the first time this season. And it's all a bit... And, you know, it's a cliche to say the crowd is a 12th man, but there's an element of truth to it too. And going into a game like this, I think we need to remember just what's what. You know, we all have expectations of the team, and when they don't play well, it's frustrating, and everyone knows that. But we should think about it like this, right? Going into this game tomorrow, that Arsenal are your dad, right? And Spurs are John Terry. So Arsenal, the good guys. Spurs, the horrendous, despicable cunts. And for whatever reason, your dad has got to fight John Terry in an arena, like a coliseum. And the only thing you can do is be up in the stand, or do you have stands or terraces? Probably had terraces in the coliseums until a load of Scouse Romans came along and spoiled it for everyone. That's neither here nor there. What I'm saying is this: that if your dad was fighting John Terry in the Colosseum, you would be right behind him all the way, right? Even if he didn't fight particularly well, you'd be there giving him encouragement, going, come on, Dad, kick him in the bollocks. Point over that way and say, look, John Terry, there's Wayne Bridges' missus. And then when he's turned around, you know, kick him in the balls or poke his eyes out or something. You'd be encouraging and helping him as much as you possibly could. If he didn't fight particularly well, given that there's probably an age difference, right, between your dad and John Terry, certainly between my dad and John Terry, there's a big, big age difference. My dad is in his 70s and John Terry's a third or 28 or something like that. So if he didn't fight particularly well, you wouldn't go, oh, Dad, you fucking cunt, fuck off, Dad. You wouldn't. Because by saying fuck off, Dad, you're on the side kind of John Terry, if you see what I'm saying. So remember that if things aren't going our way at halftime, or things aren't going our way, that you've got to encourage your dad. And if you encourage your dad, it might be one of those things that happens in a movie. You know, when he gets the punch up and he's bits, it's a sort of Rocky-like thing, and he's getting battered to shit, and then you're going, come on, Dad, you can do it, I know you can do it. And then there'd be the slow motion bit, and he'd go... And he'd land a punch on John Terry's face, and John Terry would fall over, and then he'd stomp John Terry's face into the ground, and then all you're left with is this bloody mess that was John Terry, and your dad is victorious. And that's what we need tomorrow. We need the crowd to remember that Arsenal are their dad and Spurs are John Terry. If you get what I'm saying, which I think you probably do. So at this point, I'm going to leave it there. Because I've said more than enough, I think. Here's to a good performance tomorrow. I'll see some of you for a beer before and after the game. Let's hope that all our dads beat up all those John Terrys and leave him in a crumpled, dismayed mess, a weeping shell of a man at the end of 90 minutes. I think that's something we can all look forward to. So until next week's IrisCast, talk to you all week on the blog. Until then, take it easy. Cheers, bye-bye.
This is the Ass Blog Culture Corner. Get it into you, you giddy bag.
Today, we discuss one of the greatest pieces of film ever created. Bernardo Bertolucci himself called it more magnificent than Elizabeth Taylor's Labia. Before long, it came to be regarded as one of the finest works of its generation. A masterpiece of the audiovisual world, encapsulating everything about the subject matter in a way not seen since Haskell Wexler's Oscar-winning masterpiece, Bound for Glory. The rawness of the footage combined with the riveting performances, particularly that of the young protagonist, make a sumptuous feast for the eyes and a warm, cleansing bath for the ears. It is rumored the director shot the footage with the subjects unaware. Thinking they were merely enjoying a moment, he caught a spontaneity and vivaciousness that no amount of rehearsal could ever produce. From such things epics are forged, a coming together of time and place and matter, of man and camera, of verse and performance. So rarely do they reach the level of sublime that when they do we must laud all involved, and take some measure of joy ourselves that our merely witnessing it makes it all the more alive. In a recent interview conducted in the lowly surroundings of a North London pub, those involved in the creation of this pièce de résistance were asked if it were mere good fortune that the man whose life they had captured were afflicted in such a way. Modest to the last, they revealed it was just fate, the aligning of the stars, the mystery of the universe, that they had not the first clue how he got it. Nor did the lack of this information trouble them in any way. They were simply cognizant of the fact that he had got a twitch.
That was the Ass Blog Culture Corner. Come back for more next week, you muppet.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.